Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Hey, I'm Mike.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look at some of your favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down.
So, hey, it's Mike, and I'm back with Kevin, and we're doing another episode of Conan the Barbarian for 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger.
This episode is going to cover from they had robbed the temple and, like, they're still sort of partying with all their riches.
They're partying down,
And it's going to take us up to the Tree of Woe.
Okay, cool. So, Conan and Valeria...
They've been like going at it all night.
I don't know if fucking is the word I would use.
Making love?
They made love, man.
You're romantic.
Not to be sentimental or anything like that.
I'll buy that. This is definitely the realest love Conan's ever felt.
You know why I say that? Because Subutai, he was fucking somebody.
Okay.
Yeah.
He might have fucking more than one. Yeah. Somebody's.
Conan and and Valeria making love.
I will say they appear to be like blowing all their money.
Oh yeah.
Like in real, like true shithead style. Like they're just throwing money at women and paying
and clothes and just all kinds of gear.
Buying like ridiculous
food,
jewelry
and wine, mostly like wine and spirits and stuff like that. Yeah.
There's like whatever this party is they got going on. There seem to be a couple of dudes wrestling with each other often in one corner. And then a couple of other dudes that are like castrating a pig.
This is
a party.
I do remember when I saw it, I was like, are they cutting that pig's balls off?
And Conan,
I think they're just trying to move the pig.
Conan throws the live chicken at Valeria.
Yeah.
And like, she looked like genuinely startled. Like, I don't know if that was... if she knew that chicken was going to be thrown at her.
Yeah, no, they're having like a college party, like some stuff I probably saw back in Diablo.
They're partying real hard.
Yeah. But so having said that, they overindulge themselves.
Yeah,
true. And Conan, he's just out of it, right? He's just walked out. And they're eating gruel, which must be really popular in this town.
And with the money they have, they should be doing better than that.
Maybe that was really expensive gruel. I don't know. Like, but this is a really cool scene where, and I think it's been mimicked like 1,000 times, where Conan is like stirring his pot of porridge or gruel or whatever. Yep. And Valeria is kind of like hanging off the side and he passes out face plants into. Uh-huh. So the thing about this movie is, there's a lot of subtle comedy in this movie. It's real subtle, but it's like hilarious in this really like sword and sorcerer adventure type movie.
Mm-hmm.
So when he falls into that pot of porridge, I guess a funny
scene.
It gets
a laugh.
Yeah, it's funny. And they play it they play it like that. It's like, it's not like he got shot and killed and then died in his porridge. Like, he did that because he passed out drunk, right?
Yes. And what's crazy is, so all these like sort of guard type, King's Guard type dudes come in all in uniforms or whatever. But Conan like was legit about to die, right? Like, he was going to drown in that gruel if the guys didn't come along and sort of wake everybody up.
Well, Valeria actually knocks him out of.
She pulls him out of the stuff, right? Because he was going to drown in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would have been the end of the movie.
Yeah. So Valeria, she's wasted too, right? She's totally wasted.
Yeah, they're all messed up. I think Subutai is like blackout drunk.
I have no idea where he's at. Yeah. Apparently he got eaten by a lion or something. But yeah, they're all wasted. And Valeria, she pulls out her sword and the guards are like, oh, okay, you wanna get down? Let's get down, right? And they get real. And long story short, they basically collect Conan and Valeria and they take them to like to see
the king.
Is it Osiris or
Osric?
Osric. They take him to see King Osric. So King Osric is basically, he's like, well, where's your companion, right? And they lie. They're like,
well, they say he ran off or something.
Yeah, or they say he got eaten by a lion.
Oh, yeah, they said that, yeah.
And then they
bring him out.
And they bring him out, right? Immediately bring him out. And Conan, and he's, and you can tell that he had been partying, Subutai had been partying too, because he's just like, whoa, what's going on here? And like, Conan has to kind of grab him and pull him over to him, like, and like straighten him up and everything. And
King Osric, played by Max von Sydow.
Max von Sydow.
He's like legendary, great actor.
If at that point, had he been an Academy nominated? I'm sure he was.
He must have been for The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like he was like, this dude's like an actor's actor, yep. You know, like mm-hmm. Shakespearean, all that.
Which is crazy that they got this dude for this movie.
Well, so what I read was that he took the role because his son was a big Conan fan and told him, you should be in the Conan movie, like when he got offered.
Really?
That's like Viggo Mortensen only wound up in Lord of the Rings because his son told him, you should do these movies. That's one of my favorite books.
I'm trying to figure, like, what is that compared to now? Like, is somebody like, oh, you should do that Watchmen movie because I'm a big Night Owl fan? It. Yeah, like somebody's son.
I mean, I
like
guess that. So. Like, if you're like, why would I do this movie? It's kind of weird. It's like...
Well, I guess my point is, like, I didn't even know Conan,
The books
were that huge.
Like, I guess I think they had a big resurgence like in the 50s and whatever. So mm-hmm. maybe that's when this Max's son was a kid. I don't know. But whatever it was, that's the way the rumor goes, is that the son told him
you should do it.
And he, I mean, it's a tiny, like he only has the one scene in the whole movie, but he's great in it.
Well, yeah, I like comic books. I want to get more into comic books, but I didn't realize that Conan the Barbarian was like this huge, like to the point where they needed to make a movie about it, but they made a classic movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I said this before, but this is a comic book movie. Like you never think about it that way.
Yeah.
But this is a comic
book. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. But so anyway, they have a legendary actor, Max von Sydow.
Arnold says like he learned a lot from watching him work. Sure. And having conversations with him, like they became friends. Like Arnold seems to become friends with everyone who he ever does movies with. But yeah,
I feel like a lot of Cuban cigars are smoked on Arnold sets.
And he, what happens? Like he's telling him a story about how the snake cult got his daughter.
Right. Well, before that, he looks like he's chastising him. Like, he's like, what arrogance, what like daring, what this, what that. Uh-huh. And then he's like, I'm like amazed by that you did. I forget how he says it, but he's like amazed that they did all that stuff that
he
did.
Yeah. He basically tells them like, oh yeah, that head priest from the snake tower is really pissed off. But he's got no love for the snake cult. And that's when he sort of starts telling them like, these guys are out of control and they brainwashed my daughter and took her away. Mm-hmm. He like brings out this dagger, mm-hmm. which is like a badass dagger. It's got like the two snakes facing mm-hmm. each other on the handle and it's like double bladed.
Yep.
And Arnold says like that he still has that dagger.
I would. It's a cool pretty dagger, cool prop. I don't know how much a dagger like that would have cost, but somebody had to really make that thing. Like,
yeah.
Like how much do you think that would cost in real life? Like
thousands maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So to put $1,000 into this movie for just a thing that's going to be on set for what was on screen for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
If that long,
it never comes back. Like you
never,
think
it's not a part.
It should have been a thing that's the one he used like ultimately in the end to kill the bad guy.
It's never ever talked about again.
You're right. I don't think we ever see it again. Maybe in a deleted scene or something like that. But he basically, the king offers them a fortune, right? Like to go and rescue his daughter.
Well, there's a reason he does that too.
What's that?
Well, the reason he does that is because he misses his daughter. And he's like, all the money in the world can't ever get my daughter back.
That's really philosophical, right?
Yeah, it can't replace my daughter. It's like,
I wrote the whole quote down because I thought it was kind of deep.
Yeah, well, it was really like probably one of the deepest moments in the
film. So he says, there comes a time when the jewels cease to sparkle, the gold loses its luster, and the throne room becomes a prison. And all that is left is a father's love for his child.
Yeah, that was again.
That's you can see that, right?
That's why this movie's so perfect, because it has the moments where Conan falls into the porridge, which is funny.
Yeah.
But then it has like these really deep moments where this father talks about what he's basically saying is love can't replace money. You know, like
money can't.
Or I mean, money can't replace love. So it's like a really, like you said, philosophical film, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's got all the riches and all the whatever, but all he really wants is to have his daughter back.
Yeah, and that's his daughter. Like, being a father myself, I totally get it. Like, there's nothing in this world, there's no monetary thing in this world that could ever replace my kid.
Right.
So I get it.
You're a good dad.
I try to be.
But so Valeria and Subutai, they don't want to take this mission, right? Like, they're like, nah, this is a suicide. I mean, and Valeria tries to tempt Conan to like run away with her.
Well, this is the first time she's ever felt love.
Yeah. She's like, I never wanted to do this before. Like, we should give up this life.
She's probably been like an orphan all her life. Her parents I bet you she has a very similar backstory to Conan, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Thulsa Doom came to her village when she was a kid and killed her. You imagine, like, I mean, looking at her, can you imagine all the things that she went through growing up?
True.
To survive to the point that she's at. So she's like, I've never had it this good before. Let's not tempt fate.
Yeah.
Let's just run away
and be happy.
Because they, at that point, already have money. They don't have a lot of money, but they have money to like establish themselves.
They can always steal more. Like, money, I feel like, is not really an issue for them. It's more just
stealing.
Like,
yeah, definitely.
But so I think it's a little weird. Like, we get the impression that Conan's like not really sold. He wants to keep on with his mission, but he does appear to like smash it one more time and then he's gone in the morning.
Like, dude, man, you.
I mean, so I think it's kind of a weak move though from Conan. He was just gone. Like, he ghosted on her.
Well, so that's not the sense I get. What I get is that he didn't want to involve her in his, like, because this is like a mission that he's been on since he was like a kid, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is something that he's driven to do. And the fact that she was like saying that it's so dangerous and that we should just settle down and everything like that. At that point, he was like, oh, I don't want to bring you down with me.
Right.
So I think he did it more out of like compassion and love for her than.
But I feel like he owed her an explanation, like not just a ghost on her.
Well, so, and in fact, he left her like literally the biggest jewel that they stole, right? Which tells you that he's not concerned about money. He's concerned about the quest, right? Mm-hmm. He's more concerned about finding Thulsa Doom and completing his task.
Yeah.
So, because he could have easily just have ghosted, period, and just like left them, left the diamond, or you could take in a diamond, all that stuff like that. But he was like, no, I'm leaving this with you and I'm going to go complete what I'm supposed to go complete.
Now, I have a theory. It's a little deep. I feel like, you know, we know Conan's brave, right? Like, he'll face down a giant snake and he'll face down like an army of bad guys. But I think he's afraid to face Valeria, like have an emotional moment, like be vulnerable and all that. I think he's like afraid to have an argument with her. I mean, I think he does love her as much as he's ever loved a person.
So I would agree with that if there wasn't for that one scene later on in the movie where I hate to skip ahead, but
no, that's fine.
There's that one scene where she dies and then he's like,
spoiler.
Well, yeah, spoiler, okay. Yeah. Where, yeah. And where she dies and he's not allowed to cry for her.
Oh yeah.
So that makes me think that he's not necessarily afraid of getting too close. You know
what I will, this is like changing the subject just to keep it moving. Did you get the impression from the commentary? It seemed like John Milius was in love with Sandal.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's all the time. He just keeps calling her a Valkyrie. He's
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
She's so beautiful. She's a Valkyrie.
He was probably one of the best castings.
He's like, I feel like the thirst was real from Milius.
I think it's funny that, if you really listen to the commentary, Conan, like, Milius is talking about the film, right? And Conan's like, oh, look at me and how I did this and how
he
I did that.
He says the most obvious thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, just basically, it's like that commentary track that's for the visually impaired.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
like just
yeah.
describing what's on screen.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
I love Arnold.
Yeah, Arnold's the best.
I can listen to him read the phone book probably. But so Conan's back out journeying on his own again now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking for Thulsa Doom's Mountain of Power. I think that's what the King Osric had told them.
And Conan didn't just, he also left behind Subutai too.
Yeah, like, his road dog.
He didn't even take his boy with him. So this is, he's like on a mission.
Yeah.
Like he's,
and I think he recognizes it's probably a suicide mission. Maybe that's why he doesn't want to bring those guys along.
Absolutely why he didn't want to bring those along. And I don't even think he's like, I think going to get the princess was like, I don't want to say it was a bonus. It was more like a reason, you know, he didn't really need that reason. Like that was like, okay, I want to kill Thulsa Doom, but now I can kill Thulsa Doom, bring back the princess, and I can have my riches. Like he was still going to go, if they had never run into King Osric, he still would have gone after Thulsa Doom.
Now, I think there's probably no better time to mention this than now. There was, I guess, a deleted scene where the Kingsguard kill King Osric.
Oh, no way. Really?
Like that they cut out of the movie because then they're like, well, now the audience would know that even if they rescue her, there's no money in it for them in the end. But yeah, apparently like right after they left, like the guards, the ones who brought them all to the king, like have been bought off by the bad guys and they kill Max von Sydow, kill the king.
Almost guaranteeing that Conan wouldn't have gotten his money if he completed his task.
So I can see why they cut it out. But it's just
would have made no sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's for whatever knowledge you want to have of the movie. Like I didn't know that.
Right? Is it in the DVD?
I think it is on the DVD. They definitely mention it on the commentary.
I'll have to look somewhere. At that. Yeah. Cause that's really interesting. It would have made sense that this snake cult has infiltrated all branches of
life. I mean, they got his daughter. Like they could easily get to some of his guards.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as he's going, like, seasons are changing, like he's going in the summer, it seems like, and then it's snowing. Like, do you get the impression that months more are passing?
Again, it's not years, months. Yeah, like it took him some time. He had a little bit of money at this point.
This movie's epic. Like, a lot of time passes.
Yeah,
the beginning.
It definitely slows down a little bit once Conan's older. But I mean, it starts off when he's a kid. You know, they didn't have like the teen. Well, they don't really have the teenage years. They kind of hint
a little bit on the wheel.
Yeah, they kind of hint towards it, but they don't really have the teenage years.
So as he's traveling, that's when he comes across this, like, sort of, it's almost like Stonehenge. It's like stone formation. There's a bunch of skeletons around and mounds, and that's where he finds the wizard.
So this part I was always a little confused by, because I felt like the wizard and this Stonehenge area, they're like in the same spot, right?
I feel like it.
Yeah. But it always seemed to me like the wizard was maybe like a little bit farther away, not much farther, but like he was like the wizard is like right beside the ocean. Right.
Yeah.
And I felt like the Stonehenge was a little more inland. I don't know why I always felt like
he sort of says like, it's my job to watch over these burial.
Oh, is that what it is?
These sacred burial grounds. It's like an ancient place where I guess a bunch of kings of old are buried there. And he's like a wizard from the old school or whatever, and he's his job to protect their body.
He's the wizard of the mound, so it makes all the sense in the world. But I don't know why. I feel like there was just never that one scene where you see like Mako's like hut where he lives, like in the background of like the stone. That's the only reason I feel like that. I mean, it's.
Does his character even have a name? I don't think so.
I think he's called the wizard of the mound.
Yeah.
So
that's like a title, but not really like a name.
Not a name.
Well, as you say, he's played by Mako.
Yeah. And it's interesting because this is the narrator of the film.
Yeah.
So the weird entire,
we're just now meeting him.
Yeah. The entire film. And we're like halfway.
Yeah, it's probably halfway.
We're about halfway through. Right. The entire film, this movie's been narrated and we're just now meeting him. Right.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting choice. Like usually, you know who the narrator is. He's like, you know, from like line one, like this guy is the lead of this movie, especially like in a Morgan Freeman movie where okay, this is Morgan Freeman and this is him. But yeah, they don't introduce this character till like well into the film.
And Mako was like he was like a stage actor, but he had been doing movies for decades before this.
But I think Milius said that he got him because he's seen him in a play and he wanted to get like somebody was theatrical and somebody was like bigger than life.
And he is excellent.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody that really like over the top with
it's
that.
It's funny.
Role.
He sort of pops out and is threatening Conan right off the bat. Like, you better watch out. I'm a wizard. I can mess you up or whatever. And like he's talking about his religion. But everyone in this world seems like really cool with religious differences. Like it never is really like a battle. You know what I mean? They're not like they're not fighting for religious reasons. Like, or at least these dudes seem chill. Like they all get along with each other. Mako, Conan and Subutai. Like they all follow their own God or whatever, but they're all cool with each other.
Yeah. Not like we heard today, right?
No, that's why I'm like, it's kind of, I don't know if there was a message there, but you know, like, let's just be cool with each other. Let's coexist.
Yeah. And it's funny how, and I feel like this is like, I don't know if Arnold Schwarzenegger were to walk in right now, like, will we become instantaneous friends? I feel like
I would.
Yeah. I feel like everybody seems like a friendly
dude. Yeah.
Well, it's like, that's the thing with Mako. Like, Mako has like zero reason to like warm up to this random guy who just moved, like, came on his property.
I feel like he talks shit about Mako as well. And like, then they just sort of laugh at each other.
Yeah.
They're buddies.
He's like, Mako's like breathing fire and like, I'm this big bad wizard type guy, and Conan just laughs at him
in his face, and
Mako's like, and oh, you got me, let me make you dinner now, you know?
I think they can bond over the fact that like the wizard is also no friend of Thulsa Doom. Like, he seems to have a problem.
Establish that?
He makes some comment about like that he has no love for this snake cult or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, oh, so they're like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he sort of tells Conan, well, you can, here's where they are, you know, here's the way to get to his mountain of power or whatever. And then that's when Conan sort of goes undercover, like as a pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
He trades in his camel for a horse and trades his armor in for like, you know, more farmer wear or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's riding that camel, and like, watching a man that big ride a camel was a trip. Like, you could tell Arnold was hanging on for dear life.
Doesn't Arnold say that he like headbutted the set or something like
that? Yeah, like the camel would walk him into walls.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. I think he said he headbutted the set at some point.
He gets there to wherever, like, he finds all the other pilgrims who are on their way to the Mountain of Power, and they're like a bunch of just straight up cult members. It almost seems like Woodstock or something.
Yeah,
like, they're all like on a pilgrimage.
It does. I'm sure you've seen those. Like, they look like a bunch of hippie flower child type people.
Yeah, they all.
Some of them have really distinctive like headgear that sticks out more so than the other ones. So yeah, he basically sees like these cult members, like these priests, kind of heading towards a thing, right? Like a destination. So he follows them.
Yeah, and they wind up in some big sort of encampment. You can see like a temple in the background.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up one morning, and like, there's all these priests and priestesses there in like these matching robes, like white robes and black robes.
So how does he get? So, but he's just wearing like a flower. He's not wearing like that outfit at that point. Yeah, he's wearing like
a bouquet of flowers.
He's got like a bouquet of flowers there.
And I guess he's just like, I'm going to infiltrate this whatever the group and get find Thulsa Doom, I guess, and handle my business.
So he runs into this one priest who's definitely got a shine towards
he's like mad flirting with
him. He is, like, I forget exactly what he says, but he like opens up his shirt.
He's like saying, oh, a body this beautiful shouldn't be covered by these robes or something like
so it's interesting, like I was saying earlier, how Conan is not like a worldly guy, but he's, I guess, smart enough to play the situation.
He realizes he can turn this to his advantage.
Exactly. So he kind of like
leads him on a little bit.
Yeah, I don't even know if he really coaxed him. He's like, he could have said anything, right?
And he's like, is there a private place where we can go talk?
And
he's like, well, sure, my child. Yeah. Let's go right over here, whatever it was. Tell about the commentary.
So this is a weird, I don't know why Amelia said this, but so I guess we have to tell you what happens. Like, it basically, the priest is hitting on Conan, and Conan knocks him out to steal his wardrobe. But the priest is like really, really kind of lecherously coming on.
Yeah,
to
he's
Conan.
Legitimately, you know, stroking his muscles.
Yeah. So, Milia said this was like a homophobic scene in the movie, which is like, I don't understand.
Bro, you're the director.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, that he would admit to that this scene, he put the scene in there. But he also says something like, he's trying to say that this is like an anti-Thulsa Doom cult moment. Which backs up his homophobic line.
And to their credit, they don't pass judgment on this guy. Like, it's not like they're saying anything necessarily bad about the guy. It's just weird, as you say, for him to mention, like, for him to refer to it as being homophobic.
Yeah, it was
because
weird.
If it's homophobic, it's because that's the way that you made it. Because
you put it in there that way.
It's an odd observation to make. But maybe it's that it's been 20 years and now I can see, like, I would have done it differently now. But he didn't say that.
I don't even see where that there is even that big of a issue with that scene.
Like, he just took advantage of the situation.
That had been like a girl and he had done it, it would have been no different. So like, if we're all equal and everything like that, why should it matter?
I don't see it because they didn't say like this guy's a monster.
Yeah. It wasn't making him seem like
he that. Just took advantage of the situation. And it was kind of, in a way, it was humorous.
Again, you're right. There's a little humor to it, but here's the thing, getting back to Conan being like an uneducated person. Like, so now he's swapped out.
Yeah. He swaps into the robes. That's
he's
another
wearing that priest's robes. Yeah. And he's walking. Now he's kind of like infiltrated the group. Right. And he's walking through the crowds and he's like,
he's flashing his medallion.
He's like giving like these half-assed like hand signals to people. Like he's praying. Like he bows to people, but it's really like half-assed, you know.
If people know, people in the know would know this guy's not doing the right hand signals or whatever.
Yeah, you even if you bypass the whole medallion part, you'd be like, "There's something off with this cat, right?"
Yeah.
But he makes his way up to the this huge set. You know,
tons of extras.
Yeah, I think he says like 1,500 extras. On set.
You don't see that in movies very often anymore.
But so they built, that's a real set. They built that thing out in the middle of like Spain, I guess. So
that took some time and some manpower
and some money, but they built that thing. Like you wouldn't like, again, if that movie was made today, that would have been totally CGI.
Yeah.
In fact, the whole villages would have been all probably CGI.
And all the crowd, you know?
Yeah. It would have been not 1,500. It would have been like a million, and it would have been like 1,500 would have been like real people, and the rest would have been CGI.
So he's coming up on that big crowd, and we got Thorgrim there. That's Sven Ole Thorsen's character, and the high priest Rexor, who we saw earlier at the Snake Tower. He's there, Ben Davidson, and Conan is like working his way up towards the front of the crowd. He's like showing his snake medallion to everyone, and he sort of gives it to everyone. One of the guards.
This is the same snake medallion that he stole.
Like you would think, it may be one of a kind. If nothing else, they probably recognize he shouldn't have this. Like this is not something that just everybody has.
This priest shouldn't have this snake medallion. Yeah.
Yeah. So the guard takes it from him and takes it straight to Rexor and Thorgrim, I feel like.
And at no point
look, this guy's got this medallion.
And at no point is Conan smart enough to figure out, oh, wait a minute, I should be more stealthy? Or, like, is his, like, lust or his...
he's blinded, by his desire.
Like, his thirst to kill Thulsa Doom, it blinds him. I should have been stealthier about this whole situation. Yeah. Like, you're right, he's... Like nobody steals something and then they start flashing it to the people that they stole in order to get into the club.
It's much the same way they robbed the tower and then went to party next door.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just like they're not the wisest thieves.
I was looking at a Tupac documentary, and I think one of the reasons Tupac was shot was because like somebody snatched a chain off of somebody.
Yeah.
But then they wore that chain to a party, and then Tupac saw that and then they started beating that guy up. And then the guy that got beat up came back at Tupac. It's like, it's like that. It's like, why would you steal this medallion from these people and then start flashing it to the same people?
Yeah. It's like taunting them.
Yeah. It makes zero sense.
Then we got like this extra hot woman comes out with like two snakes, a snake on each arm, and who assume is probably the princess. Mm-hmm. Like, cause she's getting extra focused attention from the camera and all that, whatever. Then we got Thulsa Doom's voice, like that famous James Earl Jones voice, like booming out to the crowd. And he just announces that there's a traitor among us. And that's when Rexor and Thorgrim like grab Conan. He didn't even get close to like killing.
Well, I thought the way that Thulsa Doom even came out, like in that like costume, that was really cool.
Yeah.
But apparently I don't know how he knew. I don't know if they can mentally talk to each other, but Thulsa Doom already knew that he was there. Like, how did he get
that's true? There were no cell phones, text messages.
Yeah, how did he get word that quick that there was already an infidel amongst
that's a good question
amongst the group? But anyway, so
but yeah, they snatch up Conan.
Yeah, they and call him an infidel, and they catch him and everything like that. And then I guess they take him to like a cave or something like
that. Yeah, they got him like whatever, and somewhere in the temple somewhere, and they're roughing him up, interrogating him. It seems like. So Thulsa's like kind of, I don't want to say he's being petty, but he like seems more intent on like getting his big jewel back. He's like, I want the big jewel back. And also you broke in my house and you stole my shit and you killed my snake.
But I think he was more like I don't know if he wanted it back necessarily, or he's just pissed that he stole it.
Yeah. I can see it though. Like, you stole from me. Like,
yeah, he's no, like, one steals and from he me. Was like, and I think what he said, it was like, you stole this from me and then you probably just gave it to some harlot or something like that. It's like, what a waste. Like, you don't even realize how much this cost. But it was cool that they made like a point of that stone because it comes back later on in the movie. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's, and then he talks about, like you said, how, what is it, Thorgrim was beside himself because they killed his pet snake.
I thought it was so funny that he went into depth on, like, the Thorgrim's backstory and the snake.
Yeah.
But he's like, he raised that snake from when it was a baby, and it's like, okay, who gives a fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was really trying to sell it, like, how mad they were.
He seemed to have love for that snake.
Yeah, because I think they show a scene of Thorgrim, like, stroking another snake, right?
He's got a big snake wrapped around his neck.
So do you think that was, like, a magical snake, or do you think, like, that was just, like, a regular python that they, at some point, started feeding
That humans? Had to be some sort of other species.
Yeah, like the anaconda.
I don't know if it's magic, or if it's just, like, back in that day, there was, like, a certain type of snake that they could grow them that big.
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, not that they ever showed
it. But they would have been feeding this thing, like you say, like horses
stuff. Not that they ever showed one, but I imagine there were dragons that lived in this society.
There's all sorts of magical beasts or whatever.
Yeah.
At this point, Conan blurts out that he's out for revenge. He's like, you killed my family, I'm going to kill you, which seems like a bad idea.
Well,
when,
like,
they've got you captured.
He's like, you killed my mother, you killed my father, you killed my family. And the way he says that line is where I'm like,
he can act a little bit. Yeah,
like that's where I'm like convinced that, like, and it was not only the way he delivered that line, but it was also... And the way he didn't say anything, the way he got kind of pushed around by Thorgrim mm-hmm. and Rexor, and he was just like really kind of out of it. It looked like he had really gotten beaten up, you know, like in real, like offset. I could see Schwarzenegger was like, okay, punch me like 3 times.
He was really beat up, and he was letting him throw him around off the rocks.
I mean, he's just like had this huge guy who was just like putty in their hands, like was just getting tossed around like a rag doll.
I think that's why they needed to cast guys that were bigger than Arnold, so that you could believe that they can toss him around a little bit. But yeah, word to the wise, if you're ever captured by your enemy who you're trying to kill, like, don't tell them, just say you got the wrong guy. Don't tell them that I'm out for revenge, I'm gonna kill you, because then why they don't just kill him right then and there, I don't know.
Well, he is blinded, but definitely he's blinded by his hatred. I mean, he killed his mother. He killed his mother right in front of
him. Yeah. So, and then Thulsa, at this point, he like lets in a little bit on his mentality, because he says like, oh, back in that day, I was young and wild or whatever. Yeah. He's like, I was only obsessed with gathering steel and treasure.
Yeah.
Kind of like how Conan is now.
Mm-hmm.
Says like, now I realize that having flesh, like having followers and stuff like that, is more valuable and powerful than steel.
Yeah. Don't you think it's funny that Conan's the only one that really ages? Like Thorgrim, Rexor, and Thulsa, none of them age. They all look the same.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just how they were just like, we don't feel like casting younger people for this.
Doing old age makeup on them. But you're right. Like, it's probably been, what, at least 20 years since
easily,
the beginning?
And easily. Yeah. Since he was like that little kid to where he is now. It's like
probably an 8-year-old to a 28-year-old.
Absolutely. So I don't know if there's, I mean, I don't think it's anything they ever touch on, but there's got to be some magical powers.
I could see James Earl Jones, because he seems to be a different race of man. He could maybe age slower, but the other guys just seem like dudes.
Well, I mean, if they're all part of this cult, it's like, you know, they're, I don't want to say
they
vampires.
Have spells on them and stuff too. Whatever. It's like, that's the least, that should probably be the least of our worries about what's believable in the movie.
Yeah.
And this is a great moment that happens here with the slave girl or whatever it is.
Definitely one of the scenes that sticks out of my head where Thulsa Doom is telling Conan, like, he's the riddle of steel. And he's basically saying, you think steel is strong, but steel is not strong. Flesh is strong.
Like having influence over people.
Yeah. And let me prove this to you. He's like, look around. Look up there, up in the rafters. Uh-huh. He's like, look at that beautiful woman up there. And he's like, come here, my child. And she literally jumps off of this, I don't know, 3-story rafter and falls to her death.
That would always freaked me out when I was like young watching it.
But so Thulsa Doom is basically making the point of that is real power. It's like, it's not the steel that is strong. Yeah. It's the hand that wields the steel. That's the real power.
You can't really argue with that.
You can't. And so you got to think about, like, back in the day when this movie came out, I don't remember exactly when the Georgetown, the Jamestown thing happened, but the fact that that guy could talk 900 people into committing suicide really rings home to this movie. It's like, this cult had the power.
It wasn't that long before. And I know, I think they said that, like that inspired a little bit of like the mentality of the whatever, the behavior of this cult.
So like, he's making a point. Like, it's not the bombs or the guns or the swords. It's not any of that. It's like how I have the mental strength over somebody else. That's the real, real power. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was another powerful scene.
Yeah. And so I guess rather than like kind of doing what the smart thing would be to do, which is just kill him right there, he wants to make an example.
Oh, he totally
bad guy. No, we're going to take him to the tree of woe and crucify him.
He totally bad guy monologued him.
Like, yeah. He like told him, I'm going to tell you everything. Now I'm going to not kill you while I have you. I'm going to let you die while no one's watching or whatever. Right.
I'm not going to have a guard posted just in case you get away or any of that stuff.
All right. And that is the end of this section of the movie. So we'll pick up at the Tree of Woe when we return. Thanks for listening.
Cool.